Hello, everybody, and welcome to Geek Tyrants Weekly Podcast. This is episode number 83, and I am your host, Dr. Bateman. I'm going to take you into a world that you've never been. It's going to be insane. Just wait till you hear what we have to talk about today. Just wait. Okay, so who's joining us today?
I can't wait.
You have to wait. Because I got to introduce the panel.
Okay.
So we've got Mazer with us today. Hello, Mazer.
What's going on?
Mazer, what is your favorite soundtrack? Movie soundtrack?
Ooh.
Don't act so surprised.
Yeah, I've got to say, there's one movie, just like a cue of music that pops into my head a lot, and... one soundtrack that I really my favorite film is Gattaca, and I really love that soundtrack, but for some reason the intro, like, kind of little melody to Jurassic Park, that for some reason, if I could just be walking around the house and just, like, kind of walking, and for some reason I feel like that music is my life. I don't know why, but
I don't know why either. That's really interesting.
Taking out the garbage, like, Jurassic Park comes into my head.
One of my favorite things, this is a very brief aside, Alan Trahern, the writer for Geek Tyrant, who writes This Week in Comics, told me something that I've remembered for many years now, and that was, he got a $50 bill one time, and he was telling me that every time he opens his wallet and puts a $50 bill in, he goes, "Welcome, Dr. Grant, to Jurassic Park," which I always thought was awesome, and now I've taken to doing that anytime I come across a $50 bill.
And now half of our listeners will also take on that as well. Awesome. Ben P. is joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hey, man. How's it going?
It's going really good. How? What is your favorite movie soundtrack?
That is such... It's like asking somebody what your favorite movie is, man. It's such a tough one.
It is.
So, because the soundtrack is so tied with my favorite movie, which, as of right now and as of the past few months, has been Tombstone, I think I'll go with that one for now. Although, honestly, the first thing that came into my head was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, just because of the very final song in that, like, the closing credits version of that kind of theme and stuff, how the, you know, with the three, with Brody and Sala and Indy kind of riding off into the sunset while that theme plays is just awesome to me. But
nice.
Overall, I guess I'd have to probably go with Tombstone for right now.
Nice. All right. P. Vader is joining us.
What's up, Doc?
Just kicking it. Old school.
I'm surprised it's been that long, this long on the podcast.
And no one said
somebody
that.
Has said that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What is your favorite movie soundtrack?
There are quite a few to choose from. I'm going to probably go with Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, because... The other two are good, but I feel like that's got all the, it's got, like, the Hobbit world, like, their little theme song, then it's got, like, the epic
it's
theme song as
it's
well.
It's got all the parts.
Yeah, it's got all the parts.
It does. No, that's a great soundtrack. I love that soundtrack. It's definitely up there.
Howard Shore.
Yes, Howard Shore, thank you.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember his
Howard
name.
Howard Shore is a brilliant man.
Yeah.
Now... I'd say Star Wars, but everyone would say Star Wars or Jaws, but, you know, it's everyone.
Some of those feel
Jaws.
like Pantheon type.
Yeah,
things.
Exactly. I mean, those are just like...
They're givens, you know, for everyone.
Yeah.
But
I guess most John Williams scores.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, like, because I didn't come up... The first time that, you know, when we kind of discussed what question we would ask each other, the first... movie that popped into my head was the movie Glory.
Okay.
The Civil War epic adventure. I don't know, it's just, you know, such a powerful freaking soundtrack, man. It's the dun 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 dun. Okay, I'm not gonna do the whole thing. But they do this, like,
Yo, it's funny. It's because I know Venkman owns the soundtrack, and he like listens to it in his car while he's driving.
That's awesome.
Hey, just imagine speeding down the highway, right? You've got the soundtrack just blowing in your speakers. It's amazing. It's not as amazing if you're stuck in traffic, but if you are moving at an accelerated rate, you really do feel like you are doing something meaningful.
Nice.
I've got an addendum to what I was saying before, and instead of just editing out my answer and then replacing it with this, which would probably be the smart thing to do, I'm going to make the listeners suffer through this really quickly. I've changed my mind, and I'm going with the Brothers Bloom.
Yeah, that's a great soundtrack.
Love that soundtrack. Nathan Johnson, who is Rian Johnson's cousin, I believe. Rian Johnson being the director of the movie. Nathan Johnson composed the score. Really, really great stuff. So, sorry.
Yeah.
That's my final answer.
That's okay. Thanks for playing, guys.
No, it's interesting.
We'll do this again next week. That's the end of the podcast. Goodbye, everybody.
We all picked scores. We didn't really pick musical compilations, which is kind of the trend with movies recently.
We will do. We'll do musical compilations another time.
What's your favorite movie?
I guess technically we all answered you incorrectly because the verbiage of soundtrack is actually separate from the score.
Yeah.
Because we've all answered with the actual like musical compositions of the scores instead of responding with the collection of like legitimate songs that have existed before that movie. Yeah. So we
don't need to sit here and bicker over who killed who.
Just pointing it out.
We'll make that a question for another week and actually make it about the soundtrack.
But you ask us about the score that time and then we'll tell you about the soundtrack.
Okay, so yes, that was everybody's favorite musical movie score. Okay. On to the box office numbers, just real quick. We're kind of in the middle of the week already, so I don't know. The other guys took out Inception with $35.5 million. Inception came in number two, 18.5. Step Up 3D actually came in at number three at 15.8. Salt came in at number four at 10.9, and Dinner for Schmucks rounds out the top five at $10.3 million this weekend. Yes. And so, I don't know. We're going to talk about a couple of these movies.
Oh, just a note.
The Geek Tyrant crew, we all got together this weekend, and we all went out, and we saw Step Up 3D. We made it a big Geek Tyrant event.
We met so many of you there.
It was
an amazing meetup. We had no idea so many of Geek Tyrant.
Yeah, we did this great meetup. You know, 100 people showed up. I was not expecting that at all.
We sold out the whole theater. It was pretty amazing.
It was good times, yeah. So, yeah, so that's the top five. And then
we
we're going to get
in. Acknowledge that as a joke. There's no need.
Everybody knows that didn't happen.
Yeah, that did not happen. Okay. So we're going to talk about a couple of those movies, a couple of movies that we've seen this weekend. And also, just quickly, want to do our awesome little game here where we go back in time to guess this weekend in box office history. This week we are going back to the year 1988.
Are you waiting for somebody to offer their guess, or are you just, like, repeating the word?
No, not yet. Okay, so August 5th through the 7th, 1988, here, I guess, yeah, okay, guys, it's you're on the floor, you know, you have the conch.
the tribe has not yet spoken.
Someone start off and give us a name of a movie that you think made the top 10 box office during the weekend of August 5th to the 7th in 1988. Go.
P. Vader here, by the way. I'm gonna go with... I'm wrong. I'm just gonna go with Back to the Future 2.
Ah, nice. I was actually gonna guess that.
Were you?
Really?
Yeah,
well, you both would have been wrong then.
I figured that.
Just because 1988 has 80, you know, with 88 miles per hour, doesn't mean that Back to the Future is going to be in the year 1988.
Nice connection. Well, seriously, like, you saved me from guessing that incorrectly. I know for a fact that Die Hard came out in 1988, so I'll just go with that.
You are correct. Die Hard came in at number 3 at $5.7 million.
Nice.
Yeah. John McClane. And here we are, you know, going on 2010, 2011, 2012, we're probably going to have another Die Hard film. I mean, man, amazing.
All right, I don't feel like I have a legitimate guess. Is there an Arnold Schwarzenegger film in the top 10?
Mazer with your chief generalities.
No, he's not in it, in any of these films.
Okay.
Or is he? Just joking. Go ahead, what's up?
I have no guess.
You gotta guess something. 1988. I hear whispering.
No. Ninja Turtles?
I'm purposely whispering him incorrect answers.
For some reason, I was guessing Total Recall, but I feel like that's not even a close year. But
No. Total Recall isn't in there, and neither is... Well, what did you just say?
Is it Ninja Turtles or...
No, Ninja Turtles is gone. I'm sorry.
Batman, Ghostbusters.
You missed it. Batman, Ghostbusters. Nope. No.
I've got nothing now.
Come on.
Mazer's got that shotgun blast guessing style going where he just throws everything out. All right, Venkman, just tell us what's on the list, for the love of God.
Okay, number one is the Tom Cruise film Cocktail.
Oh, we just watched
it. We did, like 2 nights ago or 3 nights ago.
Come on, you just watched it.
I never would have.
Well, that came in its second week in a row, $8.2 million. Number two, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, in its seventh week in a row, $5.8 million. Number three, Die Hard. Number four, Coming to America, $5 million in its sixth week in the theaters. Number five, A Fish Called Wanda, at $4.8 in its fourth week out in theaters. Number six, Midnight Run, at 3.7 in its third week. Number seven, Tom Hanks Big, 2.7 in its 10th week in theaters at that time. Number eight, The Blob, 2.6. That was its opening weekend for The Blob remake. Did not do too well. Number nine, The Deadpool, at 2.2. in its fourth week. And number 10, The Rescue, in its first week, made $2.1 million. So that, my friends, is August 5th through 7th in 1988 in this week in box office history.
You know what? I just realized that I think we did 1988 a couple weeks ago, because now that you list those movies, they sound very familiar. So I think maybe 3 weeks ago or something, we did 1988. So we've bounced back and forth.
You should have all been paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's on us. I think we bounced back and forth between 88, 87, and then back to 88 again. But in any case, we'll pick something in the 90s for our listeners next time.
Yeah, let's move up to the 90s. Maybe we'll start doing better.
I keep getting schooled by history.
Yeah. So, on to some of the movies that we've seen this weekend. A lot of us saw different things. I'm sure someone out there... has anyone seen The Other Guys yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I haven't seen it yet, unfortunately. I'm really bummed out I haven't seen it yet. I don't know when I'm going to get the chance to see it, because this week so many other movies are coming out that I have to see. Mm-hmm. So, geez, Louise, I'm screwed. All right, tell me about The Other Guys. Guys?
Tell me once again why I got on this roof. I chalked that up to bad life choices.
In the toughest city in the world, nobody fights crime like these guys.
Somebody call 911. Holy sh!
And then there's The Other Guys.
Stop humming that song. We know, we know.
All the gunfights, all the car chases, all the sex we don't want to have with women, but we have to, all due to what you guys do.
And we do it again and again.
Hey, 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 if I want to hear you talk, I will shut my arm and work your mouth like a puppet.
Peace out.
Real characters.
You stopping me?
What?
I would say make it a priority.
Really?
I really liked it a lot. But, P-Vader, why don't you take it first?
Yeah, I'm right there with Ben. You know, I went into it thinking that... I wouldn't say I had high expectations or low expectations. I just went into it looking for a movie to enjoy and to laugh at, and this delivered, you know? It's definitely funny. I would go as far to say is that it's the best Will Ferrell movie comedy... probably since, like, Anchorman that I can even think of.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, it, like, Mark Wahlberg is pretty funny in it. Ava Mendez is funny in it. Who else? Like, everyone does a pretty good job. You know, the plot is thick enough to where it keeps the story going and it doesn't fall apart. It doesn't transition from one joke to the next. There's actually like enough of a plot to keep the movie going. And,
okay.
You know, yeah, enjoyable. And I would, yeah, definitely recommend seeing it.
Awesome. Now, I've heard, you know, Will Ferrell has kind of gone downhill for me personally. I haven't been enjoying his movies as much.
Yeah.
As I used to when he first started. Is this what do you think of Will Ferrell in this movie? Is he coming back up to be like, is he playing the same guy that we've always seen him play, or is he doing something a little different, or is he funnier at least in this? I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, Venkman, I was right there with you and like getting tired of Will Ferrell and his movies and his characters, but. You know, you asked if he's playing a different character. I wouldn't say it's a different character, but it's enough of a change, I guess, to where it's funny. You know, like he works in this role. It's not like a huge jump. It's not a huge. You don't have to buy Will Ferrell. Like it's not a hard sell him as this character. So yeah, he's definitely funny.
He's almost the straight man in this to Mark Wahlberg's kind of loose cannon. So that's different alone from a lot of Will Ferrell's recent... I mean, in all those sports comedies and stuff, which he kind of overloaded on in the latter part of the previous decade, he essentially just turned into a massive gimmick. And I think that was born from the success of Anchorman and how well that character kind of infiltrated pop culture. But he just tried to replicate that so many times that... Everybody just got a little tired of his shtick, but this one I don't think he plays, you know, a kind of carbon copy of that type of character at all. I think he keeps the humor and stuff like that, but he really is kind of more of the straight-laced, like, he plays the character who's kind of, like, content to sit behind the desk and do the paperwork and do that kind of stuff, so he's not very... bombastic or ridiculous until he's kind of provoked by Wahlberg's character.
Yeah.
But man, I mirror a lot of what P. Vader just said there. I think the movie, unfortunately for me, fell and it didn't fall apart at all. It did not get the comedy kind of fell off just a bit towards the end, but that was just in favor of wrapping up the plot points and things like that. I mean, P. Vader mentioned that it had enough of a story to kind of drive the narrative forward. I would say that might even be a little bit of a downfall. It had almost too much story, maybe too unnecessarily complicated. It got into this big kind of economic commentary and just like corporate inside baseball type of stuff that, you know, it kind of goes over your head at one point. You know, Will Ferrell at one point is... under the bed with Mark Wahlberg, like explaining to him what is going on, and I'm sitting there like listening to him talk, and I still couldn't really 100% follow who was stealing money from who and what was going on. So they kind of drown the movie in this, you know, unnecessary complexity, I think. But overall, man, this movie, it was a lot more surprising than I thought. It works on a bunch of different levels besides just the comedy aspect. There's a lot of stuff going on here that was very, very entertaining to watch. And, you know, like I said, it kind of, there's aspects of it where you could walk away reading this movie a bunch of different ways and taking certain aspects of it away, valuing those aspects higher than others, which you can't really say the same. I don't think you can say the same thing about recent Will Ferrell movies.
Yeah.
I heard Michael Keaton was pretty good in The Other Guys.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He was. And now that I'm thinking about it, Dwayne Johnson and Samuel Jackson were funny in it, too.
Yeah. Aside from the 9-1 holy shit joke that was in the trailer, that was the only thing that I didn't really find that funny. But I didn't find that funny in the trailers.
Was Steve Coogan okay in this? Because I actually heard some people say they didn't like... They didn't even think he was funny.
Yeah, he's the villain, yes. The kind of British... he was okay. He just was kind of the... He was the villain. He didn't really... It wasn't one of those movies where, like, Zoolander, for example, where Will Ferrell plays Mugatu, who is almost as entertaining to watch as Derek Zoolander himself. This is not that type of movie. It's very clearly the protagonist's story, and concentrating way more on them. And Steve Coogan, I feel like, is a lot funnier than this movie would dictate. But but he did well.
He does all right. Yeah. Definitely see it if you haven't seen
it. Yeah, absolutely. I have no problem recommending this to anybody. You know, we talk all the time about how film is subjective and stuff like that, and I think comedy is probably the most subjective of any genre. It's hard for any comedy to kind of reach a broad audience and have a lot of people say definitively this is funny. You know, funny is a hard thing to lock down, but I think if you're it's a easy bet to say that if you're a fan of Anchorman, you'll probably get a kick out of this movie.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well then, shoot, I'm gonna have to find time to watch this movie then.
Yeah, definitely.
Alright, another movie we wanted to talk about a little bit is Rob Reiner's latest film, which opened up this weekend, called Flipped. And also joining us for this discussion is Mealy Kane, who, you know, has some input on what she thought of the film. And I saw the film, and Mazur saw it, and Mealy saw it. So we're just going to talk about this movie a little bit because I thought it was amazing. I loved this movie. It's one of my favorite movies of the year. I loved what Rob Reiner did and took us into this, you know, took us back in time into this world and you know, brought us into this place that you wish you could go, you know?
Sounds like Avatar.
Yeah. Except I'm not going to kill myself if I don't go. Because it's not real. I really enjoyed this movie. It's just was good, solid filmmaking, good storytelling, great characters. I am so happy that Rob Reiner went out and made this. It's not going to be a huge big box office success, but it's just such a great story. And I highly recommend you check it out if it's playing in your area, because this movie was great. It's like the feel good movie of the year.
Was it?
Well, I don't know. I loved it.
It's funny when you
sorry. Can I just say I really enjoyed the movie, but a lot of it was really sad to me, and it wasn't.
It was sad.
The trailer made me. I went into it thinking it was going to be a, like, light period romantic comedy, and it's definitely not that. It was really good, and
It's not Leave It to Beaver?
It's not Leave It to Beaver, and it's not, I don't know, some light period
Happy Days.
Romantic comedy. It's not Happy Days. It has some, like, emotional heft to it, and the characters are really real, and it's set in the suburbs, and so there's people who have, like, missed out on their dreams, and there's people who have a really hard time in their life, and and so I really liked the movie, but it made me cry in more than one spot.
Well, no, I agree. The movie was definitely emotional, but I don't know. I was able to take something positive from it.
I'm not saying it was all a downer and like I wanted to kill myself.
Because it wasn't. It really wasn't.
No, but, it wasn't that. But I don't know that I would call it the feel good movie of the year either.
Okay, you're probably right.
Yeah, I gotta say.
Now that I think about it a little bit more,
when you watch the trailer, it does feel like it's gonna be. That's why I said Leave It to Beaver and Happy Days. It feels like it's gonna be this kind of flat. Oh, look at this! These kids and they're gonna fall in love. It's gonna be great, but there is so much more than that. It is really deep, and it's actually based on a book also called Flipped. I really enjoyed the film. I'm actually also very happy with the ending of the film. I went through, and I don't want to give any spoilers, but the movie gives you more than the book does. So if you are someone who has seen the film and said you wanted to see more, the book gives you even less. So, I don't know.
So for that really vague and doesn't make sense to anyone who hasn't seen the movie, like, encapsulation of the ending, I like that the ending was, I don't know, ambiguous exactly, but it's really open-ended. It's really kind of
you could see it,
a beginning rather than an ending.
Yeah, you could really see it any way you want. But I got the performances by the actors in this film. It's really interesting because it starts out and you don't. The movie is narrated from two different perspectives, and it's great to see the.
And you go back and see the events from both perspectives,
and how differently those play out from people's perspectives. It just reminded me of that kind of split screen expectation shot in 500 Days of Summer, where you see the expectation and what actually ended up happening. Yeah.
I think that at the beginning, that when he first moves to the neighborhood, I think that's like vastly different. But I think most of the time it's not like huge differences in like what happened. It's more the characters' reactions to it and what they thought about it.
Yeah,
is what's really different.
It's also just it's very much a coming of age story because the characters go through from being kids. And, I mean, we see them do a bit of a time jump, and you can see them... But we do see them mature a little bit, I think, more than you would in a film of, like, a comedy. You really do see them go from kind of this completely everything is glowing and magical world where you're kind of questioning who people really are, which is kind of scary at that age to realize that people who you think are perfect are not perfect.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I feel like, to a certain extent, her view of him throughout the movie echoes a little bit his view of his father throughout the movie. It's not quite like a perfect parallel, but I think it's like the initial, like, just blind love beyond kind of logic. And then kind of coming to see them as, like, a complete person, and maybe you don't like them so much, and maybe there's things that you would change about them. But I thought that was really interesting. And I think that the girl in this is, like, totally kick-ass, and the guy is actually kind of lame for a lot of the movie. I think he's... I think it's interesting to see him grow up to kind of realize that and...
He
mature
was
and, like, see his perceptions of things change and his...
How he's a reflection of his own father.
Exactly. And how he comes to realize that she's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I would recommend... It's like a film that you watch... Sometimes there's some films you can watch and just go, classic, right? I think this is a classic. I think it's a film that I would enjoy showing my kids... Or other people's kids. I don't know.
He's just going to start pulling kids in off the street and make him watch it. It's going
to like,
be
you
creepy.
Seem about the right age. You're almost ready for love. I'm going to prepare you for
it. Hey, you watch this. Rob Reiner seems like he's...
He's going to be standing on our front porch with candy. Come here, kids. Come here.
Reiner seems like he can make a classic movie every now
and
again.
Yeah, I mean, he did Stand By Me, which has this thing where you think it's going to be this light film, but...
It reminded me a lot of Stand By Me in kind of the tone of, like, there's fun moments, but it's, like, serious, and I felt that the tone was very, very similar to that of Stand By Me.
Yeah.
No joke, guys, I took my kids to see this movie, and I've taken them to see, like, you know, Pixar films, animated movies, whatever, and they can't seem to sit through a movie. You know, they'll like start squirming, crying, and then want to leave or whatever at some point, most of the time. And I took them to this movie. Not once did they, I mean, they sat there entranced in watching this film. They never took their eyes off it, which was amazing to me because I was like, whoa. This is interesting to them. I wasn't sure how they take it, you know, but they were so engulfed in what, you know, was going on that they did not, they sat through the whole movie perfectly fine. It was amazing.
That's really interesting because it doesn't play as really a kid's movie.
No, it doesn't. Not at
all. It's just a good story. So that's really, I don't know, that's interesting. Bravo, Joey, for raising girls who like good stories.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do.
So you guys saw The Rocketeer recently, right? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should talk about that. I'm mad I didn't get a go. I really wanted to go to this and see this, and I just right. It totally slipped my mind.
So we had an opportunity. Disney... D23 did this thing where they're going through their archives and they're replaying these classic Disney films in the theater, like not digital, like actually, yeah, they're pulling them film out of the vault to show these films. And I probably haven't seen The Rocketeer probably for maybe seven, eight years since I last saw it. And I was really worried that the film would age very terribly, and it has not.
Oh yeah,
the effects in this film. I was talking to Bob Neek earlier this week about the effects because they were all done optically, and this was like the, you know, one of the better done optic films. Everything is shot for real, which means, even though, you know, a composite might not look like the most awesomely gelling composite, it's real objects, and it just looks amazing. And on top of it, I think the writing is actually the strongest part of the film. The whole structure and the pacing of it, I think, is extremely. It just makes me extremely like mad that there's not a sequel to this film, because the art of it is so beautiful and the characters are characters that I would want to see again. Unfortunately, it was beat out by Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and it only made $49 million.
And I think Terminator 2 came out about the same time. Maybe I might be wrong about that, but it was up against some heavyweights at the box office at the time and kind of tanked in the theaters, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm. But the fact that, the fact that if you go to Comic-Con, you'll see Rocketeer artwork, and people will spend hundreds of dollars on a Rocketeer, you know, statue, figure, whatever, it means it's obviously long-lasting.
That's actually, we went with some friends of ours, and their brother is a huge Rocketeer fan and couldn't afford to buy a ticket to see the movie in the theater again because he just bought, like, a very, very expensive collectible Rocketeer figurine, which is a little bit, you know, hilarious.
Catch 22 on that.
Yeah. I hadn't actually seen it since, I think I probably saw it once on VHS in, like, 1992. And liked it, but I haven't ever rewatched it. And so I knew there was something on, like, a Zephyr exploding and mm-hmm. Jennifer Connelly in that dress being, like, the feminine ideal of beauty. Like, she's, yeah. But I knew the Nazis were involved sometimes. So it was really, like, seeing it pretty much fresh. I never knew what was happening. And there's some good lines in that movie.
There was every moment that you're supposed to laugh, or they're supposed to be, the audience laughed. Every moment where you feel like the audience is supposed to cheer, they cheered. And the action was great. It was really completely satisfying, all the sequences.
Yeah, and it was really interesting. One of the writers from the movie, I think his name's Danny Bilson or something.
Oh, yeah.
Was actually sitting just in front of us. And he had he wasn't like a special guest there. He had just heard they were filming it or they were showing it and brought his 8-year-old daughter who'd never seen it. And I thought it was like so nice that he was there with this audience that was so responsive. And there with his daughter, like showing her, like, look, I made this and it's still good after all these years and people still like it.
That's really cool.
It was just a really kind of nice thing.
The Rocketeer is one of my favorite movies ever made. I love this movie so much. The performances are all fantastic, especially Timothy Dalton as Neville Sinclair, which is just like,
so
he's such a great villain.
Is he supposed to be based kind of on Errol Flynn?
It's like Errol Flynn and Clark Gable. Like,
yeah. Well, Clark Gable combined. Is actually in the movie. I mean, not actually himself,
there's a
Clark Gable character.
Yeah.
Well, we see Clark Gable. Hey, Clark.
Hey, Clark, when he takes her to the restaurant.
There's just such, like, the one line that I recall specifically from Neville Sinclair is he menacingly boasts that he's the number 3 box office star in America, which I just love fact that he's, like, so proud of it, of being number 3. This movie,
who are they going to believe? You or the number 3 box office draw in America?
Oh, man. This movie, like, you're exactly all the stuff you were talking about, I haven't seen it in a little while either, but I do own it on DVD. I've rewatched it a bunch of times, and it's just, if you guys are interested in The Rocketeer, go to the Onion AV Club and search for The Rocketeer. Somebody there a couple years ago wrote this huge, long kind of essay about it that is really great to read for any fan of The Rocketeer, just talking about the kind of Americana and just the like everything, all the messages about it. It's very, very well written piece. I'll try to throw it in the show notes on the page or something if I can track it down. But it's so much fun, this movie.
Yeah, I've got to wonder how it did internationally, because it is such an American film. It is like Superman. It just has America written all over
it. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, we had talked about How to Train Your Dragon earlier this year, and I think maybe even brought up comparisons of The Flight in that movie to The Flight in The Rocketeer. Like, there's just such a sense of wonder and excitement about when Cliff, you know, throws that rocket pack on for the first time.
The rocket pack, I mean, it's not control. He's not Superman. It's completely chaotic, and he's on the edge of control. Losing control, but he's on the edge of controlling it.
What I thought was really smart, the way it was done, is when he first puts it on, like, there's someone in peril, and he has to fly up to, like, save him so that he doesn't crash the plane. And he keeps getting thrown off the plane. He, like, flies up and, like, gets there. The first time he, like, busts through the bottom of the plane. And he gets there, and he, like, climbs up, and he, like, tries to help. And then the guy, like, nudges the
barrel roll or something.
Yeah, and so he gets knocked off. And you can see each time he gets knocked off and then, like, has to fly back up, him, learning and figuring out how it works. And so I thought it was just a really interesting and smart sequence, so there wasn't, like, the, like, Rocketeer, Rocket Pack training montage.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just, like, watching him become better at flying
kind of
with
progression
this thing.
And stuff. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Dr. Brinkman, have you seen this movie recently?
I have. It's been a long time since I've seen this movie.
You gotta check it out, man.
It's probably been about 5 years since I've watched it, and as you've been talking, I've been looking of stuff online, and it's not on freaking Blu-ray, so what the hell is that all
this about? This is no joke what happened. I yelled that.
He just yelled Blu-ray. And I was like, the Disney fan club people have no control over whether it comes out on Blu-ray.
They were talking to Jimmy Trivia, and then the Disney archive guy came out, and I yelled Blu-ray.
I don't think he makes the decisions.
Yeah, the thing is, it's their 20th anniversary is going to be next year. They're gonna do it.
I'll buy it.
Especially seeing it in the theater. There's no need to. I mean, they'll do a bit of a restoration, but I mean, the effects hold up.
Yeah.
So,
And just, like, one other thing that I wanted to bring up, and this is kind of a borderline spoiler for the movie, so if you haven't seen The Rocketeer, just skip ahead a minute or two. But one of my other favorite aspects of the film is, like, when the... And it's been a long time since I've seen it, so I don't remember the names, but when, like, the Paul Sorvino character, I think, it comes out, and, you know, there's this kind of battle at Griffith Park with...
At the Griffith Observatory, it's so brilliant.
When the Nazis come out, and... He turned, like, those gangsters kind of turned on the Nazis because they're like, at least we're American or something. Like, you know what I'm talking about? You know
he
the
says,
scene I'm talking
I may
about?
Be.
I may be a two bit.
I may no, I may not make an honest dollar, but I'm 100% American.
Yeah,
or
like I'm
like
a
that.
Red-blooded American or something. I thought that was great. Like, that whole. That's the kind of Americana that we're talking about.
Really funny, just because I had a professor once who was a congressional aide and he had worked. He had met with a couple mafiosos who'd been hired to kill Fidel Castro. And in the meeting, one of them was like, I never took it. He was talking and he was saying that he never had accepted any payment for trying to kill Fidel Castro because look what America had done for him. Like, it was such a great country for him.
It was an honor of him, of his to try to do it.
to do it for the country. And I just thought that that was such an interesting, like, but kind of true thing that these gangsters who you think are actually very patriotic Americans.
Yeah.
There you go.
And one other thing, well, two other things. Bill Campbell... Like, what happened to that guy? You know, like, he was so great in this movie. He's been in some other
things.
Actually,
I have to say, watching this, I was thinking, has Billy Campbell ever been anything but the right look for a part? I don't think he's a very good actor.
I haven't really seen him.
He's good when he doesn't have to talk, I find.
I haven't seen him in many other things, but in this, I just love him so much. He seems like he had such a bright future in front of him after this movie. And I know that there's a show that recently got picked up, maybe even on AMC, like, just this morning, and I read that Bill Campbell is going to be in it. So,
he had a multi-episode arc on the OC, so I don't see why
true.
You're complaining about his career.
Well, okay. I guess I'll buy that. And then Jennifer Connelly, which you had mentioned very briefly earlier. This is one of her early roles. I kind of compare this to Cameron Diaz in The Mask, but good. Like, she just every, I mean, yeah, you were talking about the kind of feminine perfection of whatever ideal or something. She's just phenomenal in this.
I didn't even realize Alan Arkin was in that film. Yeah. I completely did not recognize
and,
him.
And Terry O'Quinn, John Locke from Lost
well,
as Howard Hughes.
Alan Arkin had the best line of the film for me after their house got shot up and Billy Campbell says, come on, we gotta go home. And he says, we don't have a house, we have a gazebo.
That's right.
It was, yeah, that was my favorite.
Good stuff.
And Terry O'Quinn as Howard Hughes was great, and with hair and a mustache, looks exactly like my grandfather. It's weird.
Bizarre.
Well, I'm bummed out that I missed out on this big screen Rocketeer event.
You should be.
I am. Totally bummed. I'll never get that chance again.
Everyone who's listening to this should throw it to the top of their queues of whatever company you use for that, or go out and rent it immediately, because that's how good this movie is.
Or just write a letter
to Disney asking for a Blu-ray release.
Or your congressman. They'll make it happen.
They can do anything.
Yeah, now I don't want to watch it until it actually comes out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, that might be smart, because with the 20th anniversary
unless it
up,
never happens.
Yeah.
Damn, it's gotta happen. It's gotta. It's Disney. They put all their stuff on Blu-ray. It's Disney!
Yeah, but it made like $41 million in the box office.
There's a lot of ridiculous films making it to Blu-ray. If The Rocketeer doesn't make it, it's just ridiculous.
All right, so on to some geek news. Got some interesting things to talk about. There's this... Okay, the Deadpool movie. Most of us are looking forward to it. Ryan Reynolds...
I'm not.
Okay, well, Ryan Reynolds has had a heavy hand in developing it. The guys from Zombieland, the guys that wrote Zombieland are writing the script. As much as I hated X-Men Origins Wolverine, with the way Reynolds has been talking about Deadpool, I can't help but get excited about it because he keeps saying that, you know, that he's going to do it right, that it's going to be done the way needs to be done. So I've been excited about this. And
but didn't we hear that with Hugh Jackman and for Wolverine?
Yeah, you're right. You stop, okay? Look, I want to be excited about Deadpool, okay? Don't take that from me. Okay, so, and there's a lot of people that are excited about it. It's Deadpool.
I would
if you do it right, it would be a great film. If they do it right. Now, here's something interesting. This is the creator of Deadpool, Rob Liefeld, tweeted a comment today that kind of threw things in a little, like, started questioning, okay, so what's going on with this Deadpool movie? He said, Warner Brothers just trying to protect their investment. They don't want Ryan Reynolds playing Deadpool and Green Lantern. Interesting to watch.
Wait, it's so, not Fox not wanting him? It's Warner Brothers not wanting him?
It's Warner Brothers, yes.
Okay.
Hmm.
Is that the only kind of basis for the story? Is that what...
I think I can understand it if they're saying, hey, we're liking what we're seeing. We're going to do at least 3 or 4 more films or something like that.
Right.
I can see why they would want that.
But Venkman, is that the only... Is that tweet the only kind of evidence we have of this story? Is it?
Well, after I posted my thing, you know, I kind of went through and did a little rant talking about it, and we got a tweet back from the creator saying that we had it reversed. Warner's wants him, and he clarified saying Warner's wants him to do back-to-back Green Lantern films, which would disrupt Deadpool.
Okay,
so Warner Brothers is pushing to get
Green Lantern sequels and all
exactly.
that kind of stuff. Yeah.
They okay. want to get him done fast, which means that they're trying. They don't want him to do
right. I mean, yet,
which makes sense. But yeah. Still, it
sucks. I don't think that there's any reason to assume that a Deadpool movie starring Ryan Reynolds won't happen, though. We haven't been given any indication with those tweets or whatever that is completely out of the picture. I feel like he's just commenting that. Since Warner Brothers kind of made this announcement of wanting to shoot back-to-back sequels and stuff, that it'll probably just get pushed for a while. Because I'm right there with you. I think I'm not super excited about the movie or anything. You know, I kind of voiced my opinion on that last time we were talking about the Zombieland writers writing it. But I do like Ryan Reynolds, and I think, you know, anybody who spends that much time trying to actively develop a movie has a true passion for it, and that gets translated onto a screen, especially when he's as hands-on as he's been about this particular project. So, you know, I kind of want to see it come to fruition just for that reason alone, and then not to mention the fact that I feel like he would play a good Deadpool in a well-written movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think... This Green Lantern thing could only help the Deadpool film for a few reasons. I mean, I was giving some snipes, and mostly because I just don't currently have confidence in Fox's ability to produce a great Marvel property.
Which is well-founded based on their previous efforts.
Yes. Hugh Jackman, even with the clout he had, could not bring a Wolverine film back around to something that would satisfy the fans. I think Ryan Reynolds does not have currently the clout to do that. Ryan Reynolds, after doing several Green Lantern films, would have the clout, probably executive producer strength on a Deadpool film. If you do something where it's... I mean, they might want a PG-13, but if they had something where it was rated R, then it kind of... For Warner Brothers moves it out of kind of competition with the Green Lantern franchise in terms of how people see it. So, and who wouldn't want to see a rated R Deadpool film?
Yeah,
everyone wants to see a rated R Deadpool film. My kids want to see a rated R Deadpool film. Now, you know, it should be interesting to see how it plays out, but hopefully. I don't see why he couldn't do both. I mean,
Chris Evans is the perfect example of how it can work. So I don't think that, you know, these tweets are any sort of definitive statement that he won't be Deadpool in the future.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing I wanted to bring up real quick is this news just broke tonight that director Todd Phillips, the guy that did The Hangover and Old School, is going to develop a John Belushi biopic, which I think is awesome. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. I'm sure you've seen John Belushi movies, like yes. Animal House or 1941. Saturday Night Live, Blues Brothers. Anyway, the guy is, like, hilarious. He died, obviously, at a young age of a drug overdose when he was 33 years old. But, so we didn't, you know, we didn't get to see what his real full potential was. But I think it's cool that we're actually going to get a biopic and that Todd Phillips is the guy that's going to develop it. Right now, he's just producing it. But there is a chance that he could end up directing it. So, what do you guys think of, I don't know, this Belushi biopic that's...
I think it all kind of depends on who you get to play John Belushi.
It's a great question.
Are you going to get his brother Jim?
Yeah. It's really interesting. The Hollywood Reporter article named a few different actors, Zach Galifianakis being at the top of the list of taking on the role. He's the only one that's kind of officially been mentioned. Then you have Jack Black, who has been wanting to play John Belushi. He's had interviews in the past where he's talked about he turned down any offer that he had. He'd drop whatever he was doing to play Belushi in a movie. So, you know, there's going to be tons of comedic actors out there. They're going to be pushing to get this role. I mean, this is a role that could win a comedian an Oscar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a role that can get someone get a comedian nominated. So a lot of people a lot of comedian actors are going to be, you know, pushing for the role.
Mm-hmm.
I think Zach Galifianakis would be a great fit, but he's 40 years old. You know, Jack Black's 42, so I don't know if they may be too old to take on the role. Other actors that have been mentioned to take on the role of Belushi is Jonah Hill. I don't really see that, though. Seth Rogen, I don't see that either.
It seems like they're just naming comedians.
Exactly what they were doing. They're naming big husky comedians is pretty much what they were doing. None of them I could see really playing Belushi, but I think I could see Zach Galifianakis taking on the role. Out of everybody they named, I think he's the best one, but I'm sure there's someone out there that
I could only think of, Clark Duke from Hot Tub Time Machine. The thing about
that would be really interesting, actually.
The thing is, you have to have a Jim Carrey, Andy Kaufman-ish type thing happen, because Belushi's performances comedically were all very physical. You can't just have an actor just try to take on his mannerisms and stuff. It's gotta be a full
Transformation.
Full transformation. You can't have any part of the original actor be showing. And I don't know if there's going to be an actor out there who can even do that
And just
correctly.
The perception of, like, those actors that you had mentioned, Venkman, of the Jack Blacks and the Seth Rogans and stuff. I don't know if... I mean, Belushi was such an iconic actor and just personality. I don't think people would be able to get past the fact that they're seeing Zach Galifianakis as John Belushi for the entire length of the film, like, regardless of performance. I think he was so iconic that I don't know if anybody can really, any big name actor could overcome that.
Yeah. I don't know, it should be interesting to see what happens.
Maybe they'll do something like they did with that Notorious movie, that Notorious B.I.G., biopic that came out last year, and have somebody, you know, do kind of an open call for somebody who resembles him or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited that they're doing it. I mean, I think
It's really.
This would make a great film.
I would say just because he's so well, it's like doing a film about Elvis. There's so much to capture in. You can even have someone take down every performance part mannerism, but the presence is the hardest thing to get. And it's like I've seen very good impersonations or character portrayals of Elvis, but I've never seen an actor completely nail Elvis. I mean, another film I can think of that was really good was Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix. But even then, it wasn't completely Johnny Cash. It was still through a kind of a filter, even though that performance was amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
he helped himself by singing, by doing his own singing in that movie, which a comedian wouldn't have that same kind of bridge to help them, you know, build that connection to the audience with Belushi, unless they mimicked scenes from the Blues Brothers in the film, you know?
Yeah, you'd have to be going through all that stuff. You'd have to be talking with his family, with his closest friends. You'd have to watch outtakes. You'd have to, and there's so much you'd have to figure out how he works off, how he works with drugs. I mean, that's all it. It's gonna be a pretty heavy performance. I wouldn't if I had money to put towards a film. I think it's just too much of a risk to. It's too challenging.
I'd say Michael Cera is probably perfect for the role.
Or Chris Evans.
There we go.
There you go. Chris Evans can do anything.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds. There you go.
But I don't know. All it takes is an actor who is unbelievably committed, who will probably take on the John Belushi persona for the entirety of the film's production. That's kind of the level I'm thinking.
Daniel Day-Lewis as John Belushi.
All right. So what do we got coming out this week in theaters?
There's a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which I've got to see.
Yep.
Yes.
I've heard nothing but amazing things about it. Ben saw it.
Yes.
Lucky bastard.
I think we'll probably be seeing it again. And for those of you in the LA area, I tentatively, the Geek Tyrant crew is planning on checking out a midnight screening at the AMC Burbank 16. So if you guys are in the area and want to check that out, feel free to meet us over there.
We do a lot of midnight at the 16 in Burbank. So.
Yeah.
The Expendables is also coming out, which is another movie I freaking can't wait to see. I've been looking forward to that since I first heard Stallone was making this movie with an incredible action-packed cast.
P. Vader and Ben P. have already seen it.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
We saw it last night. We'll wait until next week to talk about it.
Yeah, you will.
Teaser for everybody.
Did you like it?
I can't. I don't even want to say anything.
Yeah. Damn you and your ethics. Okay. We've got Tales from Earthsea coming out. I don't know much about this movie.
This is Miyamoto or Miyazaki?
Hayao Miyazaki.
Miyazaki,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Now
released through Disney, they're doing great stuff and like ridiculous voice cast as usual.
Is it actually Miyazaki directing it, or is it from the same studio that produced it?
It's from the studio. He's not directing it. I remember that.
It's another Miyazaki who's directing.
It's the daughter or something, right?
Yeah, it's actually the person that directed it is apparently the youngest person ever to direct a feature film for this
production company. Oh, cool.
So, yeah. Then we've got Animal Kingdom, which Abe Froman saw. It was his favorite film at the Sundance Film Festival this last year. So this movie is another movie I want to see. I wasn't able to see it while I was there because I was watching something else, I'm sure. But yeah, Animal Kingdom looks like it's going to be a pretty solid film. And then we've got Eat, Pray, Love, which I have no desire to see at all. So... that knocks that out of the loop.
Just needed to be mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, just one more note about Animal Kingdom. Just the way Abe was talking about it, it's like this could be like one of those contenders for best foreign.
Yeah.
Not foreign language. What am I thinking? Yeah. But it was just a really solid film. He was just explaining everything in it, and it was just like that's exciting.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a really cool crime movie. For you guys who don't know anything about it, look it up. Check out the trailer and stuff. It looks pretty good. I'm really looking forward to checking it out. If it comes, is it opening wide, Dr. Ringman, or is it just kind of a limited?
I think it's
going
to be limited. Okay. So,
in any case, hopefully we'll get a chance to check it out.
What is the what is the cheap tagline that people like? It's departed from Australia.
Yeah,
something like that.
I think it's way more than that, I believe, but if you need to do that cheap categorization.
Other than that, you know, I'm going to be busy this weekend watching as many movies as I possibly can. So, yeah, I got to add the freaking other guys on that list, too.
Yeah, you do.
Shoot. Okay. Well, I'm going to figure that out later, at a later date.
Yeah, we got to add Flips to ours,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, you do. You jerks. Okay. As always, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Fan us on Facebook at facebook.com/geektyrantfans. Follow us on Twitter @geektyrant. Don't forget to visit our store and buy some stuff. We got glasses and shirts and awesome Geek Tyrant stuff to buy, so head on over to geektyrant.me and pick up something.
Something badass,
yeah, exactly. And you can also donate if you feel so inclined to, you know, if you like listening to our podcast, if you like the website, you know, to help keep it rolling and help keep things going, please feel free to donate at geektyrant.com/donate. We'd really appreciate any contributions that you could make. So, yeah, you know, we just thank everybody for listening to our podcast. We thank everybody for coming to the site and reading our stuff.
I've got one thing to mention real quick before we close out. Our own Dr. Venkman was actually a guest on the new podcast that I started, so if you guys want to check that out.
Oh, it was awesome. It was such a good time.
We talked about Excalibur, John Borman's 1981 kind of King Arthur epic. So if you guys are interested in that, go head on over to iTunes and just search for the Not Just New Movies podcast. We're searchable in iTunes. You can also go to notjustnewmovies.blogspot.com if you want to check that out, too.
Okay, just quick, because I just remembered talking about this last week. I don't know if it was recorded or not, but I just remembered at the end of Excalibur, it's like coming down and it's floating, and I remember pretty badly seeing wires. Could you see that in your rewatching of it?
I don't remember that particular scene. I don't think there were any wires.
I missed wires. I didn't see any wires.
You know, see, I'm talking. It's like it's floating down.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's near the very end of the film. Yeah, I don't. Maybe that was a theatrical presentation or a VHS problem or something. You only saw it back in the day.
Okay.
Other than that, thank you very much for joining us and listening to us. We really appreciate it. And make sure to tune in for next week where we will talk about more movie geek news. So everybody say goodnight to our audience.
Goodnight, everybody.
Audience.
Peace.
See you later.
Bye.